I'm Tass Mellis of The Starters.
This is Ben Golver with the Open Floor Podcast.
Hi, I'm Kristen Ludlow from NBA Inside Stuff.
I'm OG Anunoby of the Toronto Raptors.
Hey, I'm Elena Deladon, and welcome to the Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch.
Double Clutch Podcast.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, non-binary basketball fans of all ages, welcome to Double Clutch with me, Hugh Hopkins, this week. And of course, to the left of me on the screen, you can't see that if you're listening back to the audio, but I'll welcome Tom Hall. Tom, how are you doing?
Evening. Yeah, good, mate. It's good to be back on after what feels like a short break. And I'm kind of glad that you're on this evening, Hugh, and not Mike, because as we all know, the Euros is going on and it's coming home. So maybe we can just forget basketball this evening and talk about how amazing England were yesterday the whole time. What do you think?
I didn't watch a damn minute of it, I'm not going to lie.
Next.
Yeah, I think next. I even attempted to watch the Wales match the other day, but yeah. Then I got it's just not for me. I'm sorry, man. It's just
damn it. What about you, Kirk?
Did England win? Did Wales win? Did Scotland win? That's what we all want to know.
Scotland got battered today. They were quite unlucky, to be fair. England won 1-0. It wasn't actually that great, but I'll take the victory. And then I think Wales drew 1-1. So a mixed weekend of football for the home nations.
Okay, so we've covered it. Let's move on.
Thank you.
we've got me, Hugh Hopkins. We're here with Tom. And of course, in the production booth, we've got Kirk Killick. Say hi, Kirk, if you can.
Hold on a second. I'm looking at the menu.
And of course, if you're listening to it back on the audio, then shout out to Matthew Willington, the founder, the guru, the czar of Double Clutch, who will be doing the audio editing for us. But before we go into sort of around the association, how are you keeping, Tom? I've seen that, you know, you're making the most of these lighter restrictions. You're on a bike ride the other day. You've been getting out and about. How are you feeling about life right now?
It's been amazing. I've been loving the easing of restrictions and the heat in particular. So I feel like the past few weekends I've had have just been full of seeing people that I haven't seen for ages. It was, in fact, a scooter ride that I was on.
Oh, my
on Instagram.
Bad. My
it was
bad.
Amazing, actually. We went to Liverpool
Aren't
for the weekend.
Aren't scooters now illegal or something? Did I hear that?
They should be. They're flipping fast. We went to Liverpool and they're now all over the city, so you can rent them for a day for like a tenner. So we did that and just like ran right around the city for the weekend, but it was amazing. How about cool. You? I did see that you were out enjoying the heat in your Pau Gasol vintage jersey thing.
Yeah, well, good. I mean, I felt like, so I had my, if you guys didn't see the tweet, I had my blue cap on. I think it might have been my Utah Jazz cap as well. I think I had my headphones on, I had my sunglasses, and I had a Pau Gasol Spain jersey on, and honestly I felt like I was DJing a session down in like Ibiza or Mallorca or somewhere where all those cool kids go.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's been great to have the weather, and I've managed to even play a game of basketball or two. Injured myself both times. It's just I'm getting old, Tom. I'm running around like CP3 at the moment. My shoulders give me all sorts of problems. But yeah, well, hopefully we'll work through that this summer and be ready for the new season in the autumn. But we do have a season on our hands now. It is the NBA playoffs, of course, and they're in full swing. And the WNBA season has started as well. But before we get into the deep waters of all that, let's go to Around the Association. I love that little
thing. That's beautiful. I love
it. That's amazing, isn't it? Okay, so I guess I got to be all news readery now. So in around the association this week, the most important story, of course, to the NBA and the UK community is that Mike Miller, the usual host of Double Clutch, has become a father for the second time. So congratulations, Mike. Wish you could be here with us so we can sort of all say congratulations in person, but hopefully you're watching or listening back.
He's probably asleep, let's be real. I've seen him on Twitch.
He's either asleep or grumpy that he's awake. So the main NBA news, I guess, is the, you know, yesterday the Phoenix Suns, they advanced, became the first team to advance to the conference finals. We're there already. And they did it with a very convincing sweep of the Denver Nuggets. So it was a shame to see the MVP go out in that fashion. But I mean, you know, it's fantastic to see the Phoenix Suns back in competitive playoff basketball, because of course they have been probably the arena to watch and listen to. They've been the loudest and the most fun, and of course, you know, they've even been winning fights, and some guy has been sort of taking down Denver Nuggets fans and punching them and then shouting Phoenix in four, and of course they did win in four. So they've advanced. Also, we've got Brooklyn. They're starting a break now. You know, they're going up against the Milwaukee Bucks. And it's been a pretty crazy series, because the first two games were, you know, it was looking like a sweep. But then all of a sudden, you know, you've got James Harden going down to injury in the first game of the series. You've got and we had Kyrie Irving hurting his ankle in the last game, and we're now 2-2. So we're of course heading into that pivotal. You have to say pivotal every time it's a game five. It's a pivotal game five in a couple of days' time. We've of course got Philly. They've started to take control of their series against the Atlanta Hawks, and Utah and LA. They're starting to heat up a little bit. So things are really kicking off. And we've also got a couple of other things going on. First of all, it's been the awards. It was confirmed that Nikola Jokic won MVP. And then we had Rudy Gobert winning his third Defensive Player of the Year award, I think yeah, that might be a record, right? Or tied for a record, which is pretty incredible. Congratulations, Rudy Gobert. And of course, we got Derrick Rose getting an MVP vote. Fans should not have MVP votes. Get that crap out of here. We've also have the Dallas Mavericks knocked out, and interesting story on The Athletic. There seems to be trouble brewing over there in the Mavericks front office with I can't remember how to say his name, Varopoulos or something. It's the guy that's always on Bill Simmons's podcast. Do you know that guy, the betting guy?
Anyway. I'm not going to come in with any more confidence than you did. So
no. Apologies for mispronouncing your name. But
he probably didn't say it as bad as Simmons did on his pod, to be fair.
No, I probably didn't. Did I? But then we've also got the WNBA season kicking off, and the Seattle Storm. They've started to heat up. They beat the Connecticut Sun pretty convincingly the other day. To take over the top seed in the league right now. And there's been a couple of coaching openings. You guys might know about the Portland Trailblazers, the Orlando Magic. And we've had some former WNBA players in the discussions about taking over those teams. So Becky Hammon, Dawn Staley, and of course, you know, the usual Mike D'Antoni's, and interesting name, Brent Barry. I've never heard his name in coaching rumors before. Have you? That seems like a pretty
not
cool
at all
one.
No, pretty rogue.
And then to round out, to bring it this side of the pond a little bit, I know it's NBA around the association, but we like to give a little shout out to a couple of people over here. It's the Hoops Fix All-Star Classic this weekend. So congratulations, Sam Nita and Hoops Fix, for getting that up off the ground. I don't know the full details, but head over to the Hoops Fix website, where the rosters have been confirmed earlier today. And of course, we've got Eurobasket, women's Eurobasket, kicking off this Thursday. So the majority of those games should be available on FIBA YouTube to watch out for. So let's get into it then. We're going to talk about playoff basketball first. I know you've been watching, even though your poor Boston Celtics, they're no longer with us. But let's talk a little bit about the team that have reached the conference finals first. I think a lot of people were wondering coming into this season about the Phoenix, this playoffs, about the Phoenix Suns, because they had that top seed, the second seed. But, you know, everybody was questioning, they'd never been to the playoffs before. Really, the only guy that's been to the playoffs before gets injured every single season. And then within a few days, Chris Paul got injured, but they still managed to hold it together. How far can this team go?
I think as long as the teams that they keep facing get their star players injured, then they'll be all right and they could go all the way. No, they've been amazing. It was funny entering the year. Everyone was kind of saying that it was one of these years where, for the first time in a long time, anyone could win it. And there's so many favourites. There was like 10 teams that people were saying could be up there and competitive. And it's played out that way. I always kind of thought that, but then thought when it comes down to it, it's still going to be like LeBron and these guys that are deciding it. And to everyone's surprise, the Lakers went out pretty early to them. And the Suns have just had such a togetherness. And CP3, who, again, everyone thought was this contract that was just going to be dead in the water, one of the worst contracts in the league a few years ago, just keeps getting better and better and better, which all culminated last night with one of his best performances, especially in a Suns uniform, maybe all time. It's just an incredible performance, well-rounded, to carry them through. So they just seem to be a team that is really together, that knows, everyone knows exactly what they've got to do, and just plays the role well. So I think if they keep playing like this, they could go all the way.
See, I was someone who was actually critical of that contract a few years ago. And at the start of these playoffs, I didn't double down, but I defended my stance all those years ago. Wow. Because what I will say is that they haven't made it to the finals yet. They haven't won yet. And that's the thing about Chris Paul, is that every year since that first big contract he signed, every year he has broken down in the playoffs, and that he has been the reason why some teams have not won a championship. I'm thinking about the Houston Rockets, but also the Clippers a few years earlier. So when I saw he was injured coming into this playoffs, I thought, well, that's another team that he's cost a championship. But they're still going. You know, how much can he actually hold on to this? Because it seems as if his shoulder got really bad, but I don't know, he seems to have worked through it. He's still managing to take threes, even though he doesn't really want to. And he can get, any time, you know, a team switches on him or, you know, a big man goes into drop coverage against him, he's able to just find that little seam in the mid range. And that's where he makes his money. It's where he has his entire career. So obviously he's not the main guy throughout the whole game, because he's shown with the Houston Rockets in previous years that you can't put too much on him at this age. But he's got that young core and a core of studs, let's be honest. DeAndre Ayton has been fantastic. Devin Booker. What do you think is the most important part of this team? Do you think it's Chris Paul, or do you think it's one of those other guys?
He's definitely the most important for me, just because he might not lead the scoring every time. I mean, he definitely doesn't. But just the way that he reads the game, that he knows when to get everyone else involved. You hear all these podcasts now just talking about there's no one that plays point guard like him, like he's the last of a dying breed. And I don't know to what extent I agree with that. I think it's a bit overplayed, but I do think he's playing really well. And just his kind of effect on the team, you see it on the franchises that he's been to over the past few years. You can't deny the impact that he's had. But it all comes down to what you said at the start, which is the injury. And the narrative could completely shift if, you know, in 2 games time in the Western Conference Finals, he goes down injured and that's it, and they don't progress. It just becomes the same old thing. In the space of a week, it goes from Chris Paul, some people saying he should have been MVP and all this, and he's one of the most influential guys ever. And then within a week, it could just be, oh, same again. They went out because he didn't get through. And
I think,
that's the thing.
Yeah, I mean, going back to what I was saying earlier, I think the reason why it might be a different situation this year is because they can put... He can put three quarters of the game on DeAndre Ayton and Devin Booker. And of course, you know, he doesn't have to guard, even though he's still good defensively, he's always had great defensive instincts. He doesn't have to guard the best player for, you know, 90% of the game. He can sort of get back into the game in the second half of the third quarter and into that fourth quarter and settle everybody down. You know, all the horses have done all their work. They've you know, built up a good speed, but then, you know, he gets to just step in and take them over the line. And I think that's the perfect role for him. I think in Houston, you know, it was him and Harden. And when Harden went to the bench, it was all Chris Paul, you know, and it was just too much to just create for the entire team. But he doesn't have to do that anymore because he's got two of the best young players. I mean, the thing that's really surprised me, I think I think the first year that we watched DeAndre Ayton, I didn't think much of his defensive skills in any way whatsoever. The second year, I didn't think he had taken that much of a leap, and I thought he's never really going to be, you know, your Rudy Gobert or anything like that. I still don't think he's going to be that good, but he has turned into a pretty damn good defensive big man. And I think that's something that has surprised me and a lot of other people. Did you see this in him?
Not at all. I mean, he was always taking that number one pick in the same draft as Luka. You're always going to be kind of under the spotlight and under pressure to be amazing. And he did in his first couple of years. He was okay. He wasn't great. And I just think he's slowly starting to warm to it now. Again, a bit like the Chris Paul stuff. I do think some people are starting to overplay it a bit. It's got kind of shades of Bam Adebayo last year where people are like, oh, this guy's going to be a top 20 player. And like, he's very good and the future looks bright for him. And I think he's just one of many people that know the roles, like we said, that are doing it what they need to do well. And for him, that has been defense, especially because he was a bit of a weakness when he came into the league and now he's doing a decent job. So if he continues this trajectory, I don't know that he's going to be like a multiple all-star player, maybe. Like it's definitely possible now, whereas it might not have been a couple of years ago. But it's there for him if he wants it.
Yeah, I think it's on the cards. I mean, you know, we say that he did fantastically defensively. You know, Jokic still had 30, 20, and 10. So
yeah, what can you do?
you're never going to stop the MVP of the league. But I think, shout outs to him and shout out to Devin Booker, who is proving that he is the best scorer in the league right now. I mean, you've still got Kevin Durant. I'm not sure who else is up there with it. Harden.
Kawhi for sure game three.
Well, yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, well, let's move on to that then, because, you know, Milwaukee, they've tied up the Brooklyn-Milwaukee series. And I think it's fair to say that injuries have played a big part in it. Everybody criticized the Brooklyn Nets when they went and got James Harden and then also brought in LaMarcus Aldridge and then also brought in Blake Griffin. And, you know, it was getting a bit ridiculous, let's be honest. But actually, the reason you bring in so many of those top guys, if you can, is insurance, because someone's always going to go down in the offseason, in this postseason. And we've seen James Harden lasted like 43 seconds in that first game, and he pulled his hamstring there, just sort of running underneath the basket, it looked like. It was game four, wasn't it, where Kyrie went up for a layup. He got into the lane, went up for a layup, and there's a lot of debate in the community today. You know, if you're a Brooklyn Nets fan, Giannis Antetokounmpo undercut Kyrie as he was trying to land. A lot of other people are sort of saying, well, he was just trying to get in a position for a box out. I'll leave that up to you. But, you know, ultimately it's resulted in Kevin Durant having to be a one-man show because Joe Harris didn't really show up. Of course, perfect timing. I wrote a wonderful piece about Joe Harris and all his merits as you know, a future guy, but also like one of the best supporting players for that Nets team. And of course, then he played terribly. He had like 8 points. So where do you see this series going now then? Because we're tied at 2-2, pivotal game five. And I think, it could go either way, because it's not just been the injuries. Milwaukee have also brought their defense up a little bit, haven't they?
They have. I do think it's probably the most even that it's ever been now that the two star players are out and you've got just KD who's kind of carrying the load, which doesn't say much for Milwaukee, but they have stepped it up. PJ Tucker's finally been managed to have some effect on KD that we saw last night. But I just think, I don't know, it's when you sacrifice a bit of depth and you go all in on stars, obviously when you've got all three of them on the court at the same time, you've got these guys, your Joe Harris and your Bruce Brown and Griffin and all that, and people talk about how amazing all of these role players look, but it's only in light of all the attention that the main three are getting. And we're starting to see now, if it's just KD, it'll be interesting to see, because obviously Kyrie went down mid-game, so it's kind of all in-game adjustments that we're getting KD running the show. If they come in to game five, where it's going to be, and it's just KD, and they've kind of game plan for that, being able to put some stuff together, how Milwaukee reacts to that, how KD reacts to that, and whether the other role players can step up. We've just mentioned Joe Harris. Looks amazing as that fourth option when all he's got to do is hit threes. What is he like as an initiator? What is he like as someone who's got to make more decisions on the ball and that kind of thing and get the offense going? That's the key question that they've got to answer in game five if Kyrie stays out.
Yeah, I think he's not a natural creator. I think that's why, you know, the Nets brought in, you know, Mike James from the EuroLeague. You know, he played really well. Did he win MVP? I think he won MVP out there. You know, he walks onto the court with this swagger of I'm the best player on the team, even though he's not the best player on the team whatsoever. But, you know, he's still a competent ball handler and he's still not afraid to take that big shot. So I think he needs to be the sort of guy who's setting players up. And because you're going to need to give, if you're going to have Kevin Durant being the lone star out there, you're going to need to get some different looks. It can't all be put the ball in Kevin Durant's hands and let him create at the top of the key because they'll zone in on that. You know, you need to give him some looks in the high post and in the low post and coming off the odd screen because Kevin Durant can do all that. So put the ball in someone's hands who's competent with the ball. And I think that's probably Mike James. But yeah, going back to Joe Harris, I mean, I wrote a piece for Sky Sports sort of highlighting how he might not be the engine that makes the team go, but he is a good barometer for how well the team is going because every time he scores less than 10 points in the playoffs, they lose. Every time he scores more, they win. So really, he needs to be getting up shots. And if he misses a few shots, don't stop taking shots. You know, he is still a 47% three-point shooter in the regular season, and he needs to, you know, really be... really be spreading that floor out for the entire team and making sure that everybody has to account for him. But I think it's also fair to say that, you know, in game three, I think it was, I think in game two, the Milwaukee Bucks scored 86 points. In game three, they scored 86 points, but they won. You know, in game two, they were blown out by like 30, 40 points. And in game three, they won. So it goes to show that even though, they still had Kyrie, you know, they were still going up against this offensive juggernaut, something changed. And I think the one thing that changed is that, for me, PJ Tucker was so much more physical with Kevin Durant. They got into a bit of a grumpy face match at one point. And I think PJ Tucker called him a piece of bleep, and that was very clear for everybody to see. But he really is making Durant work hard, and I think that's paying dividends for this team. But what else are you seeing out there that the Milwaukee Bucks did to slow down this team?
It's funny. I think it was Nash that came out and said after yesterday, PJ Tucker's defense was borderline non-basketball. Which is amazing. And that's what you go out and try to do. KD is someone that we know from the way he behaves online, you can get into his head. And he's been responding to a lot of these guys, even in the Celtics game when they're up by loads or whatever. You've got Smart chirping at you. You've got Grant Williams chirping at you. Like, these are guys that are not anywhere near your caliber. But if you can just kind of get on and get in his head, you know that you might be able to throw him off his game. And that's probably the only chance you've got because in real life, like, if you are going to just be down to one star and a bunch of role players and you've got to try and get through, KD is probably the one guy that you'd take first in that situation because he's showing throughout this playoffs, the way that he shoots and the way that he scores is just unguardable. And there was some insane stat, I can't remember the exact numbers, but the majority of his shots are contested and he's making over half of his threes that are contested. It's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
So I think... You know, it comes down to him, what he can do if it's just him. And if PJ Tucker can get in his head a little bit, that's all the hope they've really got to cling to.
What amazes me is, I mean, we've seen it get a bit better in recent years in terms of players coming back from injuries. I think slightly before Kevin Durant went out, it was Breanna Stewart in the WNBA, who was the best player in the league when she tore her... What is it? Is it ACL? Is that what it is? I can't remember exactly what the injury was, but it was the same injury that Kevin Durant had. And they've both come back, and they are possibly the best players in the league still. And now that they've got injuries that would previously have ruined careers, you know, like the Grant Hills of the world, you know, they didn't come back and be that player that they were beforehand. So it's amazing that we're managing to get these players for a few more years than perhaps we shouldn't be getting. Because Kevin Durant looks like the best player in the world again.
Definitely. And when he went down, that obviously as a Celtics fan, you're like, you don't want him to go to another team and the team to be amazing, but you always want these star players to come back and be as good as they were. And so whilst it's like painful as a Celtics fan to have gone up against them and got killed, and then to see him still carrying this Brooklyn team that should not be better than the Celtics if you look over the past few years, it's nice to see someone who's just a legend of the game still doing it in his mid-30s.
So go on then, you touched on it. I'm just going to pick at that a little bit. I mean, what was it? It was 2007 that the Boston Celtics won a title. And then, of course... but then, you know, you got rid of... your top three guys, you know, you brought in all these wonderful picks. You had all these fantastic, flashy, shiny things to show for it. You know, you got two of the best young players in the league, but the team that gave up everything, they might win a championship this year.
Well, to be fair, right, let's not speak too soon, because if this injury stuff plays out, they might not get to decent conference finals, which we know the Celtics have done throughout the last 4 years, just with the young guys. So I say that with not a lot of confidence that they're not going to get there. But I mean, everyone always makes that trade. It was one of the most highly regarded trades of all time, just to get back that haul that ended up being Brown and Tatum and more. Not a lot more, but there was more for those old guys. And so I can't believe I just said old guys and disregarded Paul Pierce and KG.
I think everything was on track, but then you got rid of Isaiah Thomas and the basketball gods hate you forever for it. So anyway, moving on, we've got the two other series that we simply must talk about. I think are they both playing tonight? I can't remember the schedule, but we've got Utah Jazz versus LA Clippers, and we've got Philadelphia 76ers versus Atlanta Hawks. Both at 2-1. The Utah Jazz are up against the LA, and Philly are up against Atlanta. So for you then, which one is the more compelling series out of these two? Which one are you looking forward to watching for the next few nights?
I think Utah LA. I think only because the Philly game kind of feels like it's going Philly's way. It feels a lot more like the tide has turned in their direction after an iffy game one. And so just from a purely competitive standpoint and not knowing what kind of Clippers you're going to get turning up, it's just mad that they seem to have done exactly the same thing as they did in the first series, where they just did not turn up. They did not look like a team that knew what they were doing, that were up for the defensive matchups. And then all of a sudden it comes to a crucial game three that you know you've got to win. And that's what it takes for Kawhi to turn up and be absolutely dominant, and for PG to do a little bit, and for to just try and look better as a team. So I do think that's unsustainable. I don't think, whereas at the start of last year and maybe this year, you can kind of look at them and say they are contenders, even though they're still in it. I don't see the way that they're playing kind of gets them to the finals and gets them a victory. So it comes down to this next game. The narrative could completely change if they come out and smash them again, but we'll see.
The Clippers should be the best team in the league, right? Like, they've got Kawhi Leonard, who for like 4 years now, every time he has a good game, the whole league seems to be like, yeah, he's the best player in the league, you know, because he can do everything on both ends of the court. And, you know, if it wasn't for all the time management stuff, you know, because he's had health stuff going on. But if it wasn't for that, and if it wasn't for these weird games where it just, even though he's putting up the numbers, he never fails to get his points. I think it's just that it just feels like he wasn't on the court at times, even though he's still getting 26, 27 points. There'll be games where it's like, but what did he do though? You know? And then next to him he's got Paul George, who let's not make any bones about this. Like when he was in Indiana, he and LeBron James went head to head, and you know, if it wasn't for a failed rotation on behalf of his name? The tall guy in Indiana Pacers, who's not there anymore. He's like retired because he got played out of the league because he was too tall and too slow and rubbish.
I can't remember.
Oh my God, why is his
Sorry.
Name?
Left me. Down.
Someone in the chat, if you know who I'm talking about, mention it, because it's completely left me. He was in like Parks and Recreation. Never mind, I'm moving on. So yeah, he basically there's a bad rotation, and LeBron James had a straight line drive to the basket, and essentially won a game seven against the Indiana Pacers while he was with the Miami Heat. Ever since then, Paul George hasn't been right, because the following year he broke his leg in a horrible accident playing for Team USA in the scrimmage, and then, you know, I think it took him a year and a bit to get back to just being confident then. And he has these games. He's still got that beautiful game where he's so sleek and he just seems to slide past people and get fantastic, beautiful. Like Roy Hibbert. Thank you, Mike Miller. I knew I could rely on Mike Miller. Congratulations, by the way, Mike. Yeah, he's so sleeky and he can shoot from everywhere. He's fantastic to watch on times, but again, he just disappears and it's so disheartening. So I think they have the talent to do it because they have a great team around them, but there is something that's always off with the Clippers, you know?
In the same way that we've just gone on about the Suns, like all knowing the roles, all stepping up to what they need to do, and it's never too much for each of them. You've got a lot of these Clippers guys, like Marcus Morris could score 30 in one game, like Paul George could score 30, but yeah, it just doesn't happen consistently enough, and they don't seem to know who to turn to when it all goes to pot. So
yeah, I mean, for me, I think the most entertaining of those two series is, you know, going back to my original question like 20 minutes ago, sorry, I went off on a tangent there. I think is Philadelphia versus Atlanta. Now I think we may end up having a gentleman sweep on our hands, personally, but the most entertaining thing in the world, in the basketball world that is still playing, is probably Trae Young. He can, you know, he can have bad games, but he looks good and it's all fun when he's on the court. And of course, you're going up against the best trash talker in the league, maybe at the moment, in Joel Embiid, obviously playing two completely different positions, but both making basketball entertaining in their own way. I think the key thing is, you know, everybody sort of can see the 76ers perhaps going to the finals, but, you know, there's still questions around whether or not you can have Ben Simmons out there in the final 4 minutes of a game, and if that's the case, who's going to be that guy feeding the ball and doing the ball handling and, you know, setting up the offense? So where do you see that series being won and lost?
I think it's just that Embiid has got too much for them, and it's as exciting as Atlanta are, and they are really exciting, it's probably just too early for them. And missing Hunter now for the rest of the season, that's quite a big loss for them, because although he wasn't like one of the best scorers on the team, he was just a good all-rounder that kind of filled the gap for them and can give them a bit of wing, two-way wing stuff going. I do think Trae Young's been amazing. He's been one of them guys where for the past few years it's like, yeah, he's amazing in the regular season, but can you really like keep him on the floor in a playoff game, because he's just going to get exploited? And he's shown that this all-star stuff that he's got in him carries through to the playoffs, and he's still one of the most exciting players, as you've just seen. And another one, like we spoke about DeAndre Ayton before, in light of that Luka trade where it's like, oh, I can't believe you traded Trae Young for Luka Doncic. Like, it's never going to be the same. He has been very good, not Luka level, but still very good. And so
He's got his team Atlanta, a little bit further in the playoffs, though, hasn't he?
Definitely. You know, can't argue
maybe,
with that.
Maybe Atlanta didn't make a mistake. I mean, they did, because Luka Doncic is going to be, you know, he's going to be a three-time MVP. But, you know, yeah, I think it's probably, we're going to look back on that draft class and, yeah, we're going to be, you know, picky, and we're going to go, well, maybe that guy could have gone one higher. But actually, a lot of teams did a lot of good jobs in that draft. Okay, so we've blasted through the playoffs there. We're going to take a bit of a lighter hit now. So let's move on to Nick's silly nonsense.
Nothing but Nick's silly nonsense.
So for those of you that don't know or might not tune in every single week, I mean, most of the people in the chat tune in every single week, and we see you and we appreciate you. Thanks for coming along. But Nick Whitfield is one of our one of our personalities, one of our contributors who's on this roundabout of Double Clutch fun. And he sends in a silly nonsense question every single week. And this week, his nonsense is, my favorite Instagram Easter egg is currently from Dennis Schroeder. He appears with alarming regularity across basketball and non-basketball posts alike, always posting the same thing. That's tough. It doesn't seem to matter what the post is or what it's about. It's always tough. So, what is your favorite social media oddity from the world of basketball? Now, if you don't mind, Tom, I'm going to take a bit of a stab at this first.
Go for it. It's all you.
One of the things that I love... Now, I am not fashion conscious, right? The most fashionable things I have is a pair of Jordans, and that's about it. The rest of it is just dorky t-shirts and you know, dad shorts. So I'm not very fashion conscious. But one thing I love is how the NBA and the WNBA have sort of turned game entrances into London Fashion Week. So we're going to start off with a picture. Hopefully Kurt can bring this picture up. This is Clyde Frazier back in the day. Now, this I don't recall the NBA really doing these catwalk things before the 1990s, but I did some research, and of course Clyde Frazier was one of the people that popped up, because that's him getting out of the car with his bag in hand. He's wearing this cool hat with his suave coat, and Clyde Frazier, you know, for the rest of his life, was the coolest. Wait, no, I'm not killing him off too early, am I? He's still around. I think he's still around.
Is he cool and is he still suave? That's what we want to know.
He might still be suave. I think he's still pretty suave. I think he still does Knicks games.
Oh no, I can't believe he's done that.
So he's still the coolest cat around, right? He always wears the best suits. That's sort of one of the first things I can remember about, you know, what we know today as NBA fits. Of course, we've got social media accounts all over the place now. And one of the things that I love is also the post-game sort of situation where they're with reporters. So let's move on to the next picture here. This is another one where another famous one of someone arriving, and it's of course Rasheed Wallace with the, I think it's actually the WCW championship belt. And he looked so cool doing this. And this is, like I said, this is like late 90s, early 2000s, where, you know, people started not wearing suits, you know, inspired by like Allen Iversons and players like that. And they started wearing their own clothes. And there is some terrible, terrible clothes, because they were just all too baggy. And David Stern brought in this sort of rule that you had to wear a suit, which didn't go down very well. And I think that's why, you know, Rasheed Wallace actually brought that championship belt and started wearing the swag, because he didn't give a damn if he got fined. But then fast forward to today, and it looks so awkward in the post-game presses, right? So one from a few years ago was Kevin Durant. That's my bad. I put them in the wrong order, Kirk. I was going to go for the other one first. But yeah, Kevin Durant, a few years ago, he wore this backpack. And it was, you know, this is when it started to become awkward, because I think they dress up for the walking into the arena, but then when they finish the game, they've got to put those clothes back on, and they just look a bit stupid, sort of sitting there all hunched up on the, you know. And that bag, I think, was a turning point. It was like, yeah, we're not going to see normal clothes ever again. And then recently, this past week, we've seen Jay Crowder. So if you want to go back to that other picture, Kirk, we've seen Jay Crowder. And I think it's become even weirder now because they're not even at a desk anymore. They're, of course, in front of these Zoom screens, which we're all in front of. So can you imagine if you or I were dressed up like Jay Crowder is at the moment and just sat in front of a computer and just talking to people? It would just feel a little crazy. Like, he looks cool. He looks like a member of Migos. But, I just think it's one of the weird things that has really blown up around NBA and WNBA basketball and hasn't necessarily... I mean, maybe I just don't follow enough of the sports, but I don't see tennis players walking in and being photographed, you know, and wearing, you know, these crazy suits, or even NFL players, or, you know, football players. Like, I think this is only in the world of basketball where we, you know, take all these runway pictures and then just put them up over social media and build social media accounts around them. So, yeah, that was my sort of answer to what's the weirdest social media oddity from the world of basketball is this NBA fits and basketball fits community.
That was amazing. I think Nick would be proud of the hours that you've obviously spent doing that rather than the chunk about the players before. But it didn't show. It's all brilliant. You've carried it brilliantly.
Good. So we'll move on a little bit then. We are managing to fly through this. Well, it feels like we're flying through it. It's just because I'm having fun with you, Tom. That's what it is. To discourse on Discord. Now, one of the things that really got people chatting in the past few days is there was a picture posted of the new NBA basketballs, and everyone was a little bit disappointed because they just replaced the word Spalding with the word Wilson.
Yeah.
What do you make of these new balls?
I mean, you just said it like, what can you say? They're like orange balls that have got Wilson on them and they look like the last ones. And to be fair, if you're going to do anything drastically different in the first year, I think people would have just kicked off. So they've probably done the right thing in keeping it fairly normal. I think the specs they said are pretty much exactly the same, right? So we're expecting them to play exactly the same way as the Spalding ones do. I don't think there's going to be a lot of difference, to be honest. And I think barely the casual fan will notice that they've even changed, I reckon.
See, a few years ago, I remember when Nike started taking over the uniform, the jersey manufacturing, and they really made a statement to try and, you know, switch things up. Like, it felt like in the final few years of... Was there Adidas before Nike? I think it was. In the final few years, it was sort of like, it's just getting a bit sort of copy and paste, you know? And Nike came in and they obviously did the home and away, but they also did the statement jersey and they did the earned jersey or whatever they called these days. And I think Nike came in and they're like, no, we're in now. This is a new thing and it's going to be amazing. I think I would have liked to have seen, you know, the panels, different colors, or, you know, like... I know the WNBA ball. I was on a podcast with the people of Focus Hoops, who are mainly women's basketball podcasts, a few weeks ago when the WNBA ball was unveiled. And we were like, what's different? And it was the same sort of conversation. It's just like, I guess you have to have standards to adhere to. Maybe the NBA sets these standards, but it does seem weird to make a big thing about a new thing when it's just the old thing.
The same thing, yeah. Just going back to what you're about with jerseys and kits and stuff, would you prefer it if... Because obviously, like as you said, all the league takes on the same kit sponsor in Nike or Adidas or Reebok or whoever. Would you prefer it if it's like football where each team can have their own kit provider and it might like shake things up a bit? So you've got some with Adidas, some with Puma, some with Nike.
That would be cool. Yeah, I think I would like to see that. I mean, I guess you would have the league would have to set down restrictions. You know, they can't be too long, or the V needs to come down to there. You know, I don't know. I don't know what the rules are, but like, yeah, I agree with you. I think that people would try to outdo each other. You know, but I wonder how much of a cut the NBA gets from having an exclusive, you know, I guess their cut might be less if they are, if the league is only, you know, if it's one provider per team, I imagine they would, the manufacturers would say, well, we can't give you that much because we're only getting 1/30th of mm-hmm. the sales. So we can't, you know, so I guess that's the reason why the NBA does it, is just commerce. But yeah, I think that'd be really cool. Yeah, I'd like to see that. Hoopin' and Lootin', as ever, knows everything there is to know about jerseys. Go see him.
I want to know, right, this was a question I had earlier that I forgot to ask. Is he still sleeping with Blake Griffin now the Nets aren't doing so well?
Yeah, see, I kept my feelings to myself about that, but I'm not going to lie, Elliot. That was a little weird.
I'm not going to give any context with the people that are just listening to the podcast and have not kept up with this on Twitter. But Elliot, if you're still sleeping with Blake Griffin, then you are a lot more committed than I had you down for.
Especially after the last two games. all right, let's move on then. Let's get into some Discord listener questions. So shout out to everybody who's been following us on Discord and joined our Discord in the past few weeks. I think in the past week we've had someone called Benfold and someone called Duke join us on Discord. If you do want to follow us, make sure you head over to discord.me/doubleclutch, all one word. But some of the questions that we've had in, we had one from Elliot at Hoopin' and Lootin', the previously mentioned. He said, in the Bucks versus Nets game yesterday, there was a 3 or 4 minute timeout. A 3 minute and a 4 minute timeout. Does there need to be a change in the amount of timeouts if they're allowing that long? Because it makes games so unwatchable. Where do you stand?
Yeah, this really gets me like really annoyed. And I've said it before that if I'm ever watching a game with someone who's either a casual NBA fan or someone that doesn't follow it, and I'm like, oh, watch this game, it's really close, you love it, it's like really interesting, the drama's there, I feel like I need to apologise for the timeouts that just are relentless. And even though you can only have two in the last 2 minutes or whatever, it's just mad that you can get to the fourth quarter, there'll be 5 minutes left on the game clock, and it could take like easily half an hour to complete. And so I know they have reduced the timeouts in the past, but they still need to make some steps for me to improve that. Whether they just get rid of the amount you've got or they limit it to like 30 seconds, 1 minute, I don't know, but something needs to be done for me.
I'm totally with you. In 2011, I watched the New Jersey Nets versus the Toronto Raptors in NBA London. There were two games that year. I think they did like a home and away thing. My then girlfriend, my now fiance, managed to get us tickets for like a private box, you know, through she knew someone who knew someone. And I was so grateful for her and I thought, this is going to be amazing. We're going to build a relationship around this fantastic game of basketball. The first game was apparently really good. We watched the second game, which was a good game, to be fair. It was pretty solid, but it was like 10-point gap throughout the entire game. And you know what it's like when it's a 10-point gap. In the final 2 minutes, every team thinks they can come back from a 10-point gap, but they never do. Mm-hmm. You know, that's why that Tracy McGrady highlight is so incredible, because, you know, he turned around a game that was basically lost. But yeah, they kept on stopping and starting, and we had a really good 3.5 quarters, and it was really enjoyable. But then it just ruined it, and I blame the New Jersey Nets and the Toronto Raptors for turning my girlfriend into a non-basketball fan that early into the relationship.
And so I know some people would say that if you get rid of the timeouts and stuff, then you wouldn't get the same plays and the same standards of stuff coming out of timeouts to win the games that you see in the highlights. I disagree. I think you'd still get it. You wouldn't have the defenses setting up in the same way either, so it works two ways.
Yeah, you wouldn't, but it does create a tense atmosphere. The thing that I want to see personally, which will never happen because of adverts and money and income, but you don't feel as frustrated when you're watching FIBA basketball or BBL for people in the UK, or even WNBA. They're 40-minute games, and you don't feel that you know in those final 8 minutes you can see, you know, 4 or 5 timeouts, but you just don't see that in 40-minute games. So I'd like to see that changed. Moving on to the second question from Matt Suns Fan UK. Seeing PJ Tucker wear what seemed like 50 different pairs of shoes in today's game, what, as a cool kid, was the stupidest thing you've ever worn on the court? He says, mine, I would often wear two different colours of the same shoe. Also, size large jerseys. Mike, you've seen the size of me. I'm definitely not a large. I assume that's referring to Mike Miller. But yeah, what is? Have you ever worn anything stupid to a basketball court, or just fashion faux pas in general? Give us an insight into your life, Tom.
I played basketball a little bit growing up, not like very seriously. I did go through a period probably when I was like between 10 and 15 where I knew nothing about basketball, but I did like basketball clothing. So I think I had like a Ben Gordon Champion Bulls top. Love that. And I just went through a phase of buying these outrageous sneakers. So I had like some Reebok pumps that were just huge, some Reebok jams that were like bright teal and yellow stuff. That's probably about as bad as it got for me, but you can imagine what these like size 10 massive Reeboks look like on a 14-year-old. It wasn't good. But I was definitely I would never regard myself as a cool kid in the first place. So what about you?
No, I was definitely always a dork. I'm pretty sure, like, it must be a triple XL or something. It was a Jason Kidd Team USA jersey. I think it's by Reebok or Adidas. And it's huge. I still own it today, and I still wear it today, and it's a dress on me now. So I had this thing from when I was like 12. And I used to try and wear it. I must have looked ridiculous. But I think the thing that I was most embarrassed about during my life is that, well, I used to have long hair. I wasn't embarrassed about that. I still wish I had long hair. God, I'm balding.
How long
so
are we
badly.
Talking?
Oh, like down to my shoulders, you know? I used to, for basketball, I used to tie my hair back. And I used to put on a sweatband.
Nice. It's got to be done.
And then I always used to wear the sort of sweatband in the middle of my arm. Not on the wrist, just one. Always on my left because, I thought it was cool.
As many accessories as possible, definitely.
Yeah, definitely. I remember this picture of like Kirk Heinrich where he was wearing a headband of glasses. He was also wearing like elbow pads and a wrist pad and knee pads. And yeah, I was him for a year or two there. So moving on to the next question, this one from Richard Fang, quite simply, why can Blake Griffin dunk again?
He's obviously had some energy off the back of this new relationship that he's founded. He's just playing, like, when we said this before, when you're playing with these guys, you get something that you don't get anywhere else, and that is time on the ball, that is space like you've never seen it before. And so I don't think he's this drastically different player that has been like had his career turnaround from Detroit. I just think that he's not playing with, well, he was playing with Bruce Brown in Detroit, but he's not playing with like Svi Mykhailiuk and these guys back in there when they were some of the best players. Yeah. He's kind of given the ball and they're saying, do something. It's now KD's jumping it around and they're loving it to him with no one around.
He's no longer the overpaid lone star trying to prop up a terrible franchise. I feel bad saying that, but yeah. Detroit isn't all bad, but now he's the fifth option, sixth option some nights on a star-laden team. And he's got so much more space that, you know, it's actually hard to dunk. Like, let's be real. If you're one guy going up against five guys and expected to score every time, it's hard. It's difficult on your body, you know, because if you're the star and you need to be there for 36 minutes out of 48 minutes and be scoring every minute you're on the floor, like, you need to preserve your body a little bit. So it's quite difficult. But yeah, it is interesting how, he sort of didn't do any for about 2 years. And now that he's getting the opportunity, he will throw it down. And it's quite fun again, isn't it? That edit, I can't remember who did that edit of the Giannis turning around and then zooming in on Giannis's face and then all those highlights of Griffin Duncan is amazing. Final reader question, listener question. Nick Whitfield says, So we've had a Nick Silly nonsense. He's now back. He's giving us another question. With the way that the game has changed over the last 10 years, there's still one thing I find confusing. Long, rangy, defensively switchable forwards like AD or Giannis, both analytics and the eye test often tell us that they help their teams by playing the five, so the traditional center spot. Yet from both players and coaching staffs, there seems to be a reluctance to do this beyond short stretches and must-win scenarios. Why do you think this is?
I just think the players don't want to. And AD has been like very vocal about this in the past, that even though it's very clear that the Lakers are a lot better when he plays the center spot, he just doesn't want to. And I think it's because they feel like to have the most impact and to be the best version of themselves, they feel like they need to have the ball in their hands a lot. They need to be initiating a lot of stuff. And to be honest, they probably don't want to take the punishment defensively that they're going to take if they play center. So it probably comes down to that. And it's just not a sexy position. Like you've got, I know Jokic has just won MVP, but he's the first one for a long time that's done it at the center spot. You feel like you've got to have the ball to do it.
Just because you said being a center is not sexy, I want now like five seasons of center MVPs. I want Embiid getting it. I want Ayton getting it in a few years' time. Yeah, we're bringing back the big man. So I think, yeah, my view on this, similar feelings to yourselves, but also I think recent big men, they are often the best player on these like AAU teams, you know, when they're growing up. And the best player on those AAU teams, they just pass them the ball. It doesn't matter who else they've got on their team, really. And they're just there to create and to dribble and to shoot and to post up and to score from distance. They do everything. So I think these players growing up all their lives, they're taught to do a little bit of everything. And when they reach the league, they're not used to typical traditional back down big men. But on top of that, they only know how to create with the ball in their hands, and that's slightly further away from the rim. So I think there's a culmination of factors. But yeah, it is interesting how, like, you know, anytime the Lakers wanted to win down the stretch, they would just take out Andre Drummond or Marc Gasol or whoever and just say, and that's how they, you know, I think, Dwight Howard started every finals game last year and he didn't finish any of them. So, you know, that just goes to show that the best plays and the best style for all these teams is by, you know, moving your four up to your five. That just about does it. I noticed from a bit of the chat has been going. Shout out to Elliot from Hoopin' and Lootin'. He's been holding the fort this week. Mike's been jumping in there as well. I think we are going to be wrapping up in a few minutes, but it's important to sort of put a circle in the calendar to get our thoughts on what are going to be the big games coming up this week. What do you think, Tom? Have you got any games that you're particularly looking forward to?
I mean, it's so difficult to say because it changes game by game. And it's madly looking back even a week to when the show was on last week. Like some of the series hadn't even started then, and it feels like some of the stuff has happened years ago, but it's only days away. So I've got to go tonight just for the Utah and Clippers pivotal next game to see. If Utah take it, then it's going to look like they're going to be heading to the finals, the Western finals. If the Clippers come back, could it be another come back for them as well? I don't know. We have just had some breaking news from Kirk on the chat that Kyrie will be out for the next game.
Yeah, it sort of looked that way, didn't it? I think, I think if they can... So the Nets, I think... I meant to mention it earlier, but it doesn't look like Harden is coming back. And I think I sort of suspected that they'd want to give Kyrie a rest for that game to let his... The thing is, it's only a quick turnaround. There's only like... So it's the game is Tuesday and then they've got game six on Thursday. Now, Harden's thing is going to take a little bit longer, I think, because hamstrings, they just never heal properly. But, you know, having those extra days just to get back, I think you have to do it as Brooklyn because you have the firepower to really win two games to close out the series if you bring back like Harden and Kyrie or even one of them in game sixes and sevens. But Yeah, I think they're right to do it. You know, the Nets might steal a win at some point. They need everybody to be firing on all cylinders. But I think it's going to be a tough win. But they are back in Brooklyn, aren't they? So, you know, that really loud Brooklyn crowd can really make their mark on the game.
All these new Nets fans turning up to cheer
around. New Nets fans, yeah.
I've got to ask you, just on that, what are your watching habits for the games? Because obviously, Utah Clippers tonight is on at 3 a.m. Are you someone who'll stay up and watch it? Are you someone who wakes up the following morning and it's the first thing on?
Typically, typically it's the first thing on. So okay. I'll wake up, half six or whatever it is, roll over and put it on my phone, and then I'll go for a walk with the dog and forget where my dog is because I'm watching the phone, you know. I'll usually watch it first thing, mainly because usually I'm working. I'm either doing this or I'm writing an article until late anyway. And then we've all got full-time jobs, haven't we? So,
that's true.
There are some games I will stay up for, especially as now we're getting into conference finals and final stages. Mm-hmm. But typically, I'm a ignore social media until I've watched the basketball games kind of guy in the morning.
Yeah, yeah. The problem is, and it's the peril that we've had for years, is when you sit there and you load the NBA app up, and you turn scores off, which you can now do, because previously you see the score and you're like, damn it, there's no point watching it now.
Yeah.
Whereas now it comes on and it just already loads the news screen with a headline.
See,
so I sit there with my hand like this.
No, I was having this conversation with someone else. The WNBA app, the League Pass app, it loads up that news screen, but it doesn't seem to do it on my NBA League Pass app. So I wonder whether it's a setting that you need that you can change, because when I launch NBA League Pass, it just comes up as the list of games. And because I've got scores turned off.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, yeah, have a fiddle. See if you can change that setting. My game of the week is going to be that game six, Bucks versus Nets on Thursday. I'll probably be writing something for Sky Sports just ahead of it as well. But I think that is going to be the game where, you know, we're either, you know, a team goes home or it forces a game seven. So it's going to be, and we love game seven. Shout out Zaza Pachulia. So I think that's everything. We do have a few pieces coming up in the next few days. Sean Guest is going to be looking at the worst moment in San Antonio Spurs playoff history or finals history when Ray Allen hit that shot in the corner. So I'm not looking forward to that one, but maybe you guys will. And a shout out to the new followers we've had on Discord this week, Ben Fold and Duke. Shout out to Hoopin and Lutin over in the chat on Twitch. Make sure you follow us every week at 9 o'clock. We are twitch.tv/doubleclutchuk. And make sure you follow us on all the socials as well, guys. Tell us how lovely we are, because we like to hear from you. We're basically at Double Clutch on everything. Or is it at Double Clutch UK? Yeah, it's at Double Clutch UK. My bad. But thanks to Kirk for producing.
Cheers, Kirk.
Thanks for your time today, Tom. It's been a wonderful chatting with you. I miss you, man.
It's just good to talk hoops, isn't it?
It's always good to talk hoops. But until next time, peace.
See ya.